This is Scorebook Live Today, a podcast about high school sports across the state of Washington. I'm Andy Bueller, Scorebook Live reporter. With me, senior reporter Todd Millis, as well as former NBA player, college basketball All-American, and Scorebook Live analyst Dan Dickow. Gentlemen, how are we doing today?
Things are good. I spent a couple days on the west side earlier this week, went to a couple really good high school games, was in the rain for 2 days, and unfortunately I brought that back to Spokane with me.
I know, Dan. It's tough. It's tough being on the west side with all that rain where you guys get a foot of snow every other week. It's kind of a nice change of pace, though, I bet, a little bit.
Yeah, it's raining here in Portland, Vancouver area as usual. So that I'm sure that won't change until July. But on a busy show today, we're going to give an initial breakdown to proposed changes to transfer eligibility rules that the WIA put out in the new year. You'll want to stay tuned as we break down what could be to come, and then later on in the show, Dan interviews Prairie interim boys basketball coach Jimmy Tuominen, and then coach of the undefeated Chihuahua boys, Chad Heron. Two interviews you won't want to miss. But first, rules about high school transfers and athletic eligibility could change drastically in the future. The WIA released its proposed amendments for the year 2020, and among them, several that would shake up the rules as they exist today, if approved when put up for vote by the executive board in April and May. So we're going to give a quick rundown of those individual amendments. There's five of them, and then we're going to zero in on a couple of them that you should really be paying attention to that could potentially have the biggest chance of getting passed and the biggest impact if they did. So the first one is that any family unit moving within 50-mile radius requires continuous enrollment at a school if it's a private school. So if you enroll in a school coming into your freshman year, you're basically without a hardship waiver, you cannot transfer from that school and maintain athletic eligibility. Second, a student, including an F1 visa student coming from outside of the 50-mile radius upon enrollment to a private boarding school based upon religious preferences, would be varsity eligible. The third, and this one we'll key in on, a student who transfers shall have the eligibility at the new school only during the window of transfer. Next one is a student who chooses outside of their residence area is eligible only at that school, even if the family unit moves. And the last one, a student is not varsity eligible if they transfer to a school to join a player or coach from a non-school team, even if the family unit moves. Todd, you've spoken to one of the architects of this amendment, one of these amendments. Do you want to go in on which one that is, which one potentially has the greatest impact?
Yeah, and I think you mentioned a term that I think people around the state of Washington should get to know as this amendment as we get later and later into the year and we get closer to when the assembly ratifies this or not. And that's the term window of transfer. And that's going to happen in that transition year between middle school and high school or junior high and high school, however the districts around the state are set up. So, the best way to kind of describe this is I want to use a living example that I had to cover when I was at the Tacoma News Tribune, and how it was under the old rule, and how it would change if this new rule is ratified. And it involves former NFL quarterback John Kitna. John Kitna played a number of years in college at Central Washington. He was a Lincoln High School standout. Was in the NFL for a long time. Played for the Seahawks. And then came back to coach his alma mater here 6-7 years ago. And then at the time he took his job, he was living in Lakewood. His kids attended schools in the Clover Park School District. So when he got the job at Lincoln High School, his son, Jordan, a very good quarterback who ended up walking on as an invited walk-on at a couple schools, a couple big schools across the country, came over to Lincoln with him and enrolled. Now, the thought was from John at the time was, hey, my son's coming over. He'll just play for me. He'll start at quarterback as a ninth grader. I think any coach who would bring his son over would kind of work under that assumption. Now, under the old rule, a ninth grader, somebody transferring from a school district like Clover Park School District into another district like Tacoma Public Schools, would have to sit out the ninth grade year of playing all varsity athletics, unless you can prove a hardship. Now, in that particular example I mentioned, John, it went through an appeals process. John lost on that appeals process based on a hardship, and Jordan had to sit out his ninth grade year and play JV. Now, under the new amendment, Jordan would be eligible. He would have to declare the school that he wanted to go to heading into his ninth grade year within a 50-mile radius, and that obviously would apply from Lakewood to Tacoma. And there's another part to this. He would list as wanting to go to a different school in a different district without changing his home address is that Lincoln would offer an academic course that wasn't available at the home school he would have attended. So I assume at that point it would have been Clover Park. So again, that's almost like formality. There's so many different courses being offered at high schools that other high schools don't offer. But under the new amendment, Jordan Kitna would have played as a ninth grader varsity football at Lincoln High School. Now, I think the real incentive behind this and the motive behind this and the author of this particular amendment was John Applegate. He's a real athletic equity administrator in the Lake Washington School District. He used to be the athletic director at Redmond. He's the one that kind of authored this amendment and asked a couple schools and other leagues like Lakes and some of the West Coast schools to ratify this. I think the motive behind this is it kind of levels the playing field between public and private high schools. And the reason I say that is, you'd see this a fair amount in this particular, and it would have applied in the situation with Jordan Kitna. I'm not using that as an example because Jordan Kitna stayed at Lincoln and played his 10th and 11th grade years there. But ninth graders that are deemed ineligible for their ninth grade year do have the option to go to private schools as a ninth grader, enroll, and be immediately eligible at a private school.
That's now under the current rules.
I think the biggest incentive and motive behind this particular amendment is to make that option available to public schools in what we now call the window of transfer. Please get used to that term, window of transfer, especially if this amendment is ratified in late April, early May. So that's kind of it in a nutshell. I'd love to hear some of the discussion you guys have about this.
For me, Todd, I think you did a really nice job of explaining some of the back stories and the way that these kind of rules came about or the amendments came about, and how there's some historical kind of references to how they are developed, the impact that the old rules have, and how that the new rules are going to be implied, I guess. I think the biggest thing I have when I look at transfers at the high school level is why, if you're transferring solely for athletics, why? If you're transferring for academics, maybe why? Now, I think the biggest problem I have is when you transfer for athletics, but you're doing it on a kind of a one-year basis. You're going to see a lot of players in other parts of the country. And I think you're starting to see a little bit, unfortunately, here in the state of Washington, too, that, you know, they go to multiple high schools in multiple years, and they just kind of bounce around until they find the fit that fits them best. or they've heard something from a coach that they like the best. And I really don't like that. I have the old fashioned view of a high school is meant to be your community's team. Now I think that the gray area can be a little bit of the private schools. Now, do private schools recruit? Yes and no. The private schools, in my opinion, recruit themselves on their own because of many times the tradition that they have, whether academically, whether it's athletically, or the fact that there are, you know, families and kids that want to have a religious background to their high school education, whether it's a O'Day or a Blanchett or, you know, a non-denominational private Christian school as well. I have the biggest problem, I guess, in a nutshell, is when you see people lying about where they've moved to and they rent an apartment for 3 or 4 months just to be eligible to play in a school district and for a school when they've never moved there. I think that's, to take a long answer and make it short, those are the kind of transfers that I have issues with.
Sure, and it's a great question just asking if private schools have an inherent advantage under the current rules. And I think the answer to that would be a resounding yes, with the boundary limitations that public schools have. And Todd, the scenario that you just explained with not being deemed eligible as a freshman and then having the ability to turn around and go to a private school. So honestly, private schools and those inherent advantages is something that I hear from readers about and readers ask me about. I don't know about you guys, but it's more than everything else. I mean, this past week I had a couple of high school basketball fans from around the state reach out and emailed me and just kind of out of the blue and said, like, I want to know what you think about this, transfer situation, about the state of transfers around the state of Washington and whether private schools should have their own classification. Like, I hear that a lot. Now, is every private school a world beater and really good across many sports, like an O'Day, like an Eastside Catholic? No, it's absolutely not. But it feels like in every kind of pocket of the state, you have people kind of mobilized around maybe one school that's gotten a couple transfers, and it's the transfer thing is not a private school issue. So fascinating to see on these amendments, these specific issues that I hear about in reporting. Todd, I know you hear about. Dan, I'm sure you hear about. And anyone who pays attention to high school athletics hears about. Fascinating to see those being addressed specifically and in depth with these five different amendments. Todd, when you had your conversations with folks who were involved in at least one of these amendment proposals, was your did you get the feeling that there was a pretty good chance that these would be approved by the executive board and ratified in the spring session in April and May?
Well, one of the interesting things, and you mentioned there was five kind of sections of this. You read, five separate sections or five separate amendments, all under the kind of the same transfer umbrella. But what one thing that we didn't mention was the last one, in terms of the ramifications of sitting out a year, regardless if you're a private school, transferring to a private school or a public school, is something that the WIAA Executive Board has authored. Now, that's a big deal. When the WIAA Executive Board sort of throws its weight behind one of the amendments that will go before the Assembly, chances are, the Assembly's, that's going to have heavy sway on the Assembly, I think. I think there's nothing's a slam dunk with the WIAA and the Assembly, as we all know. But I it's going to be very interesting to see, A, the discussion with this, and B, the votes, obviously. And I do think there's a very good chance this thing passes this spring. I think the one thing we need to really stress here is this isn't a knock on private schools. This is more of an opening to be able to go to a public school when you want. Just you have to declare right out of middle school or junior high. It's going to put the onus on the family and give them an opportunity to go to a different school, maybe in a different school district from where they're lived or where they're supposed to go, kind of a one-time thing, and have their son or daughter be able to play varsity athletics as a ninth grader. So again, we're not here to slam private schools. It's more of a giving public schools a little more opportunity to kind of level the playing field. And I think people need to remember that.
Absolutely. And these are topics that we'll be discussing for months up until this vote comes to pass and when it does. This is us introducing these topics. And if you'd like to go read them for yourselves, so they have kind of in-depth bullet point rationales that are really easy to digest, go to the WIA's website. Up top, the 2020 amendment summary is right there on the homepage. So if you want to know more, head there. This is an issue. These are developments that we'll be following, like I said, for months. So expect to hear more down the road. Earlier this week on Monday, Eastside Catholic, our number two team in the state across all classifications, hosted number one O'Day. Eastside Catholic beat O'Day 83-74. It was a game that was snow delayed 6 days. It was on Martin Luther King Day. Dan Dickow, you were there. I was there. Eastside stomps its foot on O'Day from the get-go and steps into the number one spot in the state. What did you make of that game? What impressed you about Eastside Catholic? And just what were your overall takeaways?
Well, first, I thought it was an awesome environment for high school basketball. You know, Eastside Catholic is a bit a ways from the city, the O'Day fans came out there. They had a very good student section. The Eastside Catholic student section was really good. And there was a buzz in the gym. There was an energy that I quite frankly haven't seen at a high school game in quite some time. But I think the biggest takeaway for me was Nolan Hickman, by far, is the best point guard that I've seen at the high school level this season. I really liked him at WIBCA. I was curious to see how he was going to play in the high school team setting, and I couldn't have been more impressed. I think he's a kid with a tremendous future. He plays the right way. He plays hard. He's got the ball on the string. He made winning play after winning play, and defensively, I thought he gave it a big time effort as well. Now, I think O'Day did not play great that game. You know, Paolo Banchero had 29, but it was about as quiet a 29 as you're going to find. They really didn't get him the ball in spots where he could kind of do things easily. He made play after play, and then you look up at the end of the game, he's 29 points. You're like, well, I guess, you know, he hit a three, he handled it on the break, he finished there, he got an offensive rebound, he had an ISO. But O'Day, quite frankly, didn't make things easy on him at times. Their spacing was not what I was expecting to see. He'd have an ISO on kind of that elbow area, and the guys that would creep up out of the corner were all of a sudden help side sitting right in Banchero's lap. So instead of having a true ISO opportunity, you know, he's having to go one on two. I think that the positive thing, though, for O'Day is the fact that they were still in the game, you know, with 3-4 minutes left. I want to say the final score, correct me if I'm wrong, Andy, was Eastside Catholic won by 9. But it was a game that was really right down to the wire. Even though Eastside Catholic was in control, you got to look at John Christofilos. He didn't play great, but he's a guy that is known for making big plays and big shots. I really like the sophomore point guard of O'Day. I think he's got a chance to grow into a difference maker over the last 6 weeks of the season. I've seen Mount Spokane play a number of times. I really like that team. I think Degenhart's very talented. But, I mean, Eastside Catholic and O'Day were on a different level. And that night, Eastside Catholic was the better team because of the play of Nolan Hickman.
Yeah, it was fascinating talking to Eastside coach Brent Merritt, who talking to him before the season, who he's known Banchero since he was growing up. He knew his mom. Both of them played at the University of Washington. And he told me before the season, he said, you know, the most impressive thing about Paolo is not the amount of ways that he can score, but it's that he wants to pass the ball. He's not a I'm just here to get mine type of player. You see it, it's immediately evident when you watch him play, is that he's always looking to drive and dish. He's looking to get teammates involved. And that's how Eastside kind of developed their defensive strategy against him, is they said, okay, well, he likes to dish. Well, we're just going to take the shooters out of the game around him. And Christofoulos really struggled from the field. Pretty much everybody struggled shooting, and they were really effective at you know, not necessarily throwing the as many bodies at Paolo as possible, because he's such a gifted passer that he's so good at finding the open man. A lot of the night, they were kind of, you had him one-on-one. And credit to Chika Naduka. I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing your last name, Chika. But just a physical 6'5 big who really threw his whole body against Banchero. I was impressed with the defensive strategy that Eastside deployed against him, a player that nobody's going to stop at this level. I mean, he's just too good. He can score the ball in so many ways, so physical, you know, 6'10". Kind of comparing against his game against Garfield, Garfield didn't even throw a double at him. They just said, you know what, we're going to guard you one-on-one, and we think we can stop you, and they couldn't. And I felt like Eastside's strategy was a little bit more effective, but the Crusaders said after the game, you know, this wasn't a validation. They beat O'Day last year in the regular season, and O'Day came back around and beat him in the semifinals, the 3A state playoffs. So they know that this isn't, you know, while it, yeah, sure, confidence booster, a good win at this point of the season. It's a Metro League win, and yeah, I'm sure a lot of fans are hoping that these two teams face at the end of the season. Another game coming this weekend that I'm sure a lot of folks in the Seattle area are going to be looking forward to. Haley Van Lith and Cashmere takes on Kings. That's a good non-league 1A game in North Seattle on Saturday at 3:30. Todd, you're going to be there. Scorebook Live is going to be there in full force. Haley Van Lith could be the greatest girls basketball player to come out of this state. She plays her last high school game in Seattle. What are you going to be looking for?
Well, first off, I'm just stoked to get the opportunity to finally watch her play. I've heard so much about her. You and I have traveled, you know, to Chihuahua. I've seen players further away, like Talia von Olafen. But now I get to finally watch Haley play and see what everybody raves about. It's funny, you know, I heading into the game. I've got a piece that'll show up here on or publish on Scorebook Live Washington. I've talked to four coaches of good programs over the last couple of years who have faced her, and have kind of picked the brain of these coaches and talking to them and what their game plan was coming into in facing Cashmere, and specifically trying to defend Haley Van Lith. But it's not just there; it's just asking them what the plan was, what some of the in-game adjustments were, what her numbers were ultimately at the end of the game, maybe some second thoughts, kind of in retrospective, what would you have done differently? And then I'm asking these coaches to kind of grade their team's execution of the game plan they had heading into the game. Now, that might seem skewed, because in basically these four teams I've talked with, White River, WF West, Linden Christian, I can't remember right now the fourth one off the top of my head. Mount Spokane. So different levels, different classification teams. It's hard because Haley Van Lith had great games against all four of them. So it's you're going to see these grades that some of these coaches have assigned their own team on executing the game plan. It doesn't really correlate with, you know, what Haley did against that particular game plan. It's just how they executed it the way the coach wanted. So it's fascinating to me to hear these four different perspectives of coaches of good teams and how they try to defend her, how they try to take away take her away or take away other players in certain situations. So look for that on Scorebook Live, Washington, over the next day or so. And then obviously Saturday's her last appearance in Seattle before she ends her career, hopefully in the Yakima Sundome, playing for a state championship.
Absolutely. Todd's at Many Hats Millis on Twitter. Follow along with him live for that game. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Dan talks to Prairie interim head boys basketball coach Jimmy Tuominen and then coach of undefeated Chihuahua boys Chad Heron. You won't want to miss him. Stick with us. Washington Federal is a bank based in Seattle that operates 235 branches, and it cares deeply about high school sports not only in the Seattle metro area, but across the entire state of Washington. Head to WashingtonFederal.com to learn more or visit your closest branch.
Dan Dickow here, Scorebook Live. I have a special guest for the podcast today, none other than former Prairie Falcon, I believe class of 95, I was 97, Jimmy Tuominen. Jimmy, how you doing today?
I'm great, Dan. How are you?
I'm doing well. So thanks for joining. I know, Jimmy, you've been a Prairie Falcon through and through for quite some time. You're in a new role and a different role due to some unforeseen circumstances over the last couple of weeks. So first off, we want to send our best wishes to Coach Kyle Brooks, who's been at Prairie for a number of years. He's dealing with pneumonia, and he's doing his best to get himself back healthy. And in the meantime, you've taken over. So is there anything that you can fill in Scorebook Live listeners to Coach Kyle and what he's working with?
Yeah, no, absolutely. He's doing all right. He's making some progress. It's going to be a little bit of a long recovery. Kind of like you said, he had some complications from pneumonia, but he's going to be all right. He's currently in the hospital and will be for, maybe another week or two, and then he'll be able to get closer to getting home. But he's in good spirits, and he appreciates all the thoughts and prayers that you're getting from everybody in the area, and we're hoping for a speedy recovery.
I'm sure it's an interesting situation for you, knowing that you've worked with Coach Brooks for quite some time. You've been a JV coach under him and a varsity assistant for a number of years, but you also went to Prairie, so you've got that passion and that pride of being a coach at Prairie. When everything happened and they needed you to take over the program, what was the emotions that you went through and what were the first kind of things that you had to get situated to make that jump in taking over the program for the rest of this season?
That's a great question. This is my 13th year, being an assistant for Coach Brooks in some capacity, and I think year 15 at Prairie overall. So I kind of bleed that crimson and gold, and it's kind of a bittersweet, opportunity. Unfortunately, it's happened this way where Coach Brooks needs some time to recover here and had to kind of step in and fill his shoes. I think, some of the first thoughts to think about is you want to be, upfront with the kids and transparent and make sure that they understand kind of what's happening. Kids are really good at bouncing back, and they've done a really nice job, kind of handling some of that adversity that comes along with, kind of the change in terms of, the head coach. Really, some of the first things that we did was, kind of evaluate, our coaching staff and where can we move guys around to kind of fit to fill all the needs to, not only take care of the varsity team, but take care of the JV and the Frosh teams as well. And luckily, we've had a group of guys that have been together for, 3 or 4 years. And our freshman assistant, Cody Barton, moved up to the JV team. And a former player, Prairie Ethan Roush, who was helping out with the JVs this year, is coaching the freshmen. And then Steven Bjornstad, who's a Washington State grad and played basketball there and is a local Clark County guy, who's been on the staff here for a while, was able to come back and join us. So I think you know, like the first things we really looked to do is make sure that the kids understood kind of what was happening and what was going on, and then try to put them in a environment that was one that they were familiar with. So I think, you know, having Steven back and the coaching staff that we do, I think it helps that, you know, them feel comfortable and familiar and understand that the expectations haven't changed that Coach Brooks has set there the last 20 years.
That's one of the things that I always get impressed with when I talk to high school coaches across the state is the passion that they have to help kids and impact kids. Obviously, you want to do it on the basketball court, but also off the floor. I, being from Prairie, I've talked to a number of former players and students, and they've talked about, you know, just how solid of a person Coach Brooks is. I've known you, Jimmy, for going on 20 years since high school as well, and I know the you know, care that you have for the kids at that school. And I know a lot of coaches say that, but I think you and Coach Brooks embody that. Is there a kind of a creed or a philosophy that you guys have built within your program to make sure that you guys are really impacting kids on and off the court?
Oh, you know, absolutely. I think the biggest thing we say, you know, we don't believe in having a lot of rules and guidelines and stuff. I think one thing that we really talk about is, you know, don't do anything to hurt your teammates, the program, coaches, or your families, right? And that really kind of encompasses everything, right? It talks about, you know, do a good job in the classroom, be a good student, you know, be a positive role model in the classroom for other students around the school. And then when you're on the floor, let's, you know, make sure we're playing hard and playing together and care about one another. And I think probably the biggest thing, even for this group, is let's celebrate our successes, right? And then grow from our challenges. When you or your teammate does well, let's celebrate that, enjoy that moment. And when we have challenges and deal with adversity, let's face it head on and try to deal with it. And we talk about another thing all the time is that we call it MBA, and that's your next best action, right? When adversity hits, how are you going to respond to it? And that really, you know, stands through even with this varsity group this year that we've had a lot of that this season, and they've continued to push forward and make progress. So we're really excited about, you know, how they've responded to things and hopefully maybe where we're going for the rest of the season.
You guys have been a really good program for quite a while, but then you look across the gym and you see the girls program at Prairie having a tremendous amount of success, and that's gone on for nearly 30 years. I've always sensed and felt that there was a very strong understanding and a support level between the boys and girls program at Prairie. And that's not necessarily the case at every school and every program. Do you feel the same? And if so, how do you guys support each other?
Oh, I definitely feel the same. I think that was built from, you know, obviously Al Aldridge being, you know, a long time historic coach at Prairie High School. Coach Brooks being there for 20 years, I think the friendship that those two have forged and working together in terms of scheduling and trying to create an atmosphere, you know, for the basketball programs that are a positive one where kids can be successful and have a good time and then take a lot of their life lessons, you know, when they walk away. You know, some of the things we do in terms of trying to make time to go to each other's games, right, and then support one another. You know, we have back-to-back practices, and there's always a few minutes where, you know, both the girls and the boys spend a few minutes talking to each other and checking in, and we do whatever we can to be supportive. I think even maybe more so, you know, this year, just in the last couple weeks, with all the transition and changes that have kind of come with the boys program, the head coach, Hayla Corral, for the girls program has been really flexible in working with us in terms of maneuvering around with gym times and practice times and things like that. We feel pretty fortunate and blessed to be able to get it all to work out. And I'm excited for where they're going. Looks like they're on track, and you know, they haven't lost a week game in, you know, forever, it feels like, 20-some years, I think, or something like that. But, yeah, I think we just try to be supportive of one another, go to each other's games, cheer each other on, and it's always a lot of fun when both the girls and the boys teams at Prairie are really good.
Yeah, the tradition of the Prairie girls is spectacular. You know, if you look at basketball in Southwest Washington itself, it's been pretty darn good over, you know, the last 20 years or so. Obviously, there's some ups and downs, some good years, some bad years. But you look in right now, the 3A, Evergreen's pretty darn good. And then the 4A is very good. I know you went to Prairie. I know you've seen basketball in Southwest Washington for quite some time. I'm going to put you on the spot here really quick.
Okay.
The 1995 Evergreen team went undefeated at the 3A classification, which at the time was the big school classification. Union now is undefeated and looking like they have a chance to maybe run the table. Are those the two best teams that you have seen in Southwest Washington in your time being around high school basketball?
Yeah, that's a great question. Definitely that 95 team from Evergreen was special. I mean, they had really good guards, really unselfish players, a pretty good post with Paul Buschner at that time, and then he still had the Neslin brothers, and just overall really, really tough team. But gosh, you know, basketball's changed so much in 20 years. I think it'd be hard to compare, you know, apples to apples between them and the Union team this year. I will say the Union team has a lot of the same characteristics that 95 Evergreen team did in terms of they play well together. They play really hard. All those guys are really skilled. They can really shoot it. They defend well. And they just seem to have a lot of joy in being on the court together and playing basketball. You know, I'll probably say I'm a little partial to that Union team just because I get to see them in the moment and see it from a different perspective in terms of being a coach versus just a fan watching. But they have a chance to have a really special season, certainly.
Well, Coach, we appreciate your time. I know you've been thrust into a unique and challenging role this year. We wish you nothing but the best as the season continues on. We wish Coach Brooks a healthy and speedy recovery, and I know you'll pass those words along. And go Falcons.
Absolutely. Thanks, Dan, for taking the time, and I'll definitely share that with Kyle. And you're right, go Falcons.
Dan Dickow here, Scorebook Live on the podcast, here having Chiawana's head coach from down in the Tri-Cities, Chad Heron, join us. The Chiawana is off to a heck of a start this season, not just at the varsity level, but all teams in his program. Freshman undefeated, JV at this point in the season, two losses, but we're here to talk the varsity program. 13-0 as we speak with a couple big wins. Coach, I know every head coach kind of has a vision for their program, what they'd like to see their season start off like. Did you envision being undefeated at this point in the season?
I did not. You know, we play in a league where there's, you know, a great following at every school, and so when we go on the road, there can be some really tough. You know, atmosphere for the kids to adjust to, and you know, when we went to Walla Walla, and their student crowd was, you know, was a good one, and we played from behind for most of that game, and the kids just kept fighting. You know, going into Richland this year, they always put together a great effort in the crowd, and probably have the best home court advantage, I'd say, of anyone in the league, and you know, with what they've done the last few years. And I think our kids have, you know, it's an experienced group. You know, 10, like all 10 of them ended up playing on our team last year. They went to the round of 16. And so, you know, they spent the off season preparing, you know, for these moments. And I think they're doing a great job of getting it done.
You know, Scorebook Live covers the entire state and tries to really shine a light on the stories on the west side, central part of the city, as the state, as well as the east side. I know our colleagues, Todd Millis and Andy Bueller, had a chance to get out and see you guys in person. They had a couple players that they were really impressed with last week when they watched you guys. The two that came to mind first after talking to them were Cooper DeWitt and Jaden Martinez. Share a little bit about both of those guys and what they bring to your ball club.
Boy, Cooper, you know, brings a little bit of everything. He's one heck of a leader. You know, in the voting for captainship, every single kid on the team voted him to be the captain. As far as on the court, just does it all. He can score it, sees the court with great vision, leads us in assists, leads us in block shots because he is so long at 6'6". Leads us in steals. Actually, he's led us in steals since his sophomore year. Just does a great job of just his basketball IQ is off the charts. Defensively, he's in the passing lanes and getting deflections and whatnot. And he's also that player that I can put on a point guard. I can also put him on a post. So at the high school level, he can guard 1 through 5. And that just does so much for us. And then Jaden Martinez, he's another young man that he's kind of a jack of all trades, whether it's shooting off the catch or getting to the basket and going by people. He's also a heck of a distributor. And defensively, he gets it done as well. He's got an inner toughness about him that you may not notice, you know, the first time you watch it. But as the season goes on, he's that kid that just won't back down from anybody. And he adds a lot to our team. And they both are team first guys. And they both could score the ball more than they do, but they do a great job at distributing and making sure that everyone else is getting theirs too.
Pretty unique roster statistic when you look at your sixth man, Connor Mendez, leads you guys in scoring. Is that something that has just happened? Do you want some scoring firepower off the bench, or how did that come to be?
You know, we knew coming into the year that we had more than 5 starters on this team. And, you know, and just kind of gauging last summer, Connor does a heck of a job of coming off the bench. And I did at one point this season start him. I believe it was the Hanford game, the first game at their place where I started him. And actually that following Monday, he came to me and said, "Coach, I'd prefer to come off the bench," you know. And there was a senior that I had taken out of the starting lineup, and, you know, Connor being the way that he is, he's a team first guy. I think he wanted the senior to get that job back. And also, he told me he enjoys kind of getting a feel for the game off the bench. And boy, he's had a heck of a season so far. His shooting percentages are very high, and he comes in and we get better.
You guys have a luxury in the fact that you have a player that might return at some point this season, Kobe Young, another very versatile player, which seems like your roster's kind of stacked with those versatile players. I had a chance to see Kobe at the WIBCA event this summer. I thought he had a tremendous amount of talent. Unfortunately, he's rehabbing from an injury. Does it look like he has a chance to come back and play this year? And if so, what does he bring to your ball club?
You know, yeah, when he had the surgery November 6th, that's when they realized that he did have a break in his navicular bone, which is a slow-healing bone. And the doctor thought he'd be able to be ready for playoffs. That's still up in the air. He comes to practice on a daily basis and gets shots up, and he's been riding the bike and doing the rowing machine and doing some various exercises with our trainers. His mom and dad tell me he's doing things at home as well to try to strengthen it. So as far as him coming back, I guess that will be up to the physical therapist. But what he brings to us is, you know, very, very similar to what all of our guards do. He's a heck of a shooter, can really pass the ball. He's a team-first guy. The thing that separates Kobe is obviously his athleticism. You know, he just gets up off the ground so easy, so explosive that rebounds and block shots and various things, I think that'll make us better because we'll have more of an interior presence, you know, defensively when he comes back. And as far as offense, I think he'll add to the firepower because of the shooter that he is.
You've been at Chihuahua since the school opened, so you've had a chance to build the program literally from the foundation up. How has your style of play changed since you've started the program? And what's your
perfect style of play now, especially seeing that, again, you know, in the Tri-Cities, you know, you guys can be somewhat of a mystery for fans on the west side of the state.
No doubt. You know, when we first started, we actually had a group of kids that were mostly guards, and then we've gone through the last 4 or 5 years where we've had some good bigs. You know, Jalen King came through at 6'10", and then Matthew Kroners has been with us the last 4 years at 6'8", 6'9". And so I think that's the beauty of coaching high school, is that you have to adapt your style to what you have as far as personnel. And for a while, we were a high-low motion team where we had to make sure that we, you know, you played to our strengths. And then now I have a group of basically interchangeable parts where every kid has guard skills. Definitely the best shooting team I've had in all my years of coaching, my 8 years as the varsity coach at Pasco High. This group, they shoot it well. And the thing that I think people may not realize is just the passers that they are, and the skill of passing in the game of basketball is huge, because no matter how good a shooter you are, you got to have it in the right place and at the right time. And these kids understand, you know, where those passes need to be made, and they understand the drive and kick game. They understand how to get those, you know, into those gaps and make the defense, you know, make a decision. So I prefer the style that we're playing this year. I think most every coach would love to have guys that can dribble it, pass it, and shoot it. And then they're also sneaky defensively, where they have those guard instincts to, you know, when to kind of come off their guy and cheat a little bit for steals, or even as far as post defense, you know, getting into full front, getting into the big's legs and having backside help. This group has really come together on the defensive end as well, and it's a lot of fun to watch and coach.
That's awesome to hear. I love when coaches at the youth and the high school level in particular focus on, you know, players that can shoot it, pass it, and catch it, as opposed to primarily running sets. Coach, one last question before I let you go. I know Richland has been a power for quite some time. Earl Stroyford's been a really good coach. There's also some other really good coaches that have come out of the Tri-Cities area. Who would your coaching mentor be, and where have you kind of, who have you leaned on as far as building your philosophy as a coach?
You know, my college coach, Ed Weidenbach, who was at Northwest Nazarene, and before that he was at Columbia Basin College here in the Tri-Cities. I think I gleaned a lot of information and different things that he did in practices with us, and also, you know, we, as a coach, I'm always trying to, you know, learn things from other guys and see what they do, and especially at the college level as well. We try to get up to Gonzaga every summer and become good friends with the Gonzaga coaching staff, and I'm always trying to get things out of them, especially Tommy Lloyd is always very, you know, he gives me, I'll ask him questions about offense, defense, how they're doing things, and I'll get different drills, and even a couple of our offenses that we run, I've stolen, you know, from Tommy. And, you know, as far as, I think, you mentioned coaches in the Tri-Cities, we really do. Earl does a phenomenal job, Brian and Elliot at Kamiak, and for years I coached against Jim Thacker at Walla Walla. Also Pat Fitter at Eisenhower for a while there. And so there's always been coaches, I think, that when you prepare for them, you're watching so much film, and you end up finding some things that they do that are like, and I need to start incorporating that into what we do. And so, you know, also my high school coach, Mike Guajardo at Pasco High for years. I was his assistant coach for 4 years, and I took a lot of stuff from how he ran his practices and the discipline that he instilled in his players. And so I guess I'd say my college coach, Ed Whiteback, and also my high school coach, Mike Guajardo. But as time has gone on, I've just tried to, you know, steal things from different coaches that are friends, and then also from my opponents who do good things. So I think every coach is trying to get better every year, and I'm definitely doing the same thing.
Well, Coach, it's been awesome having you join us here on the podcast. We look forward to following Chiawana as the season progresses, and you guys make a run at a state tournament and possibly a state title. So, but thanks again for joining, and we appreciate it.
Hey, thank you, Dan. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.